This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
What up, everybody? It is 10 a.m. in the District of Columbia. Points north, south, east, and west. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley. Good morning, Brian. How do you do?
I am good, brother. How you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Gearing up for a new day. I'm working from home. Very exciting. The folks from Rood are coming out to check out my house. Appreciate them. Obviously, you know, it's a busy time on the sports calendar. We got college hoops. This is like the pinnacle of college hoops happening. Yeah. All the conference tournaments. But I do think we need to check White Brian a little bit, B.
What's up with him?
Did you see the subject line of the stream email this morning?
I saw that. I've already challenged him, checked him, and threatened him already today. Coming here with a little attitude today.
Yeah, I mean, White Brian
is
feeling himself.
Down. He got on an Auburn sweatshirt. He got a little hat on with a little ugly tiger on it. Oh, he doesn't have – wait. I think he don't have dog mom today. He has an Auburn – what is that? No, AU. He has an AU Yeti, dog.
For Auburn or American University?
American University.
Let's go Eagles. Let's do it.
That's Auburn, too? He got Auburn.
It's the War Eagle.
He got the war. Well, oh, y'all, a tiger or a damn war eagle. What the hell is
it? It is. What is the hell? What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Explain that, White Brian.
Weird.
Yeah, in the Civil War, there was a veteran that went to Auburn that had an eagle, and he found a wounded eagle on the battlefield, brought it back for a football game, and the legend is it flew around after the game and then landed on midfield but died.
Oh, boy.
Wait. He landed on midfield and died?
Yeah.
And that's the legend? Well, you know, my school is kind of weird, too. We have a bulldog running around, but we're the Raging Cajuns.
I mean, if we're getting technical about it, my school is a turtle. So, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, you're a turtle. That's kind of weird, but you're always a turtle. You know?
Yeah,
but
right.
My school is a Raging Cajun with a damn bulldog running around. I'm like, what are we?
That doesn't make a lot of sense. It's like Georgetown, the Hoyas, which Hoya, I think, is like a type of rock or something, but they got Jack the Bulldog rolling around on a skateboard. obviously, really important topics this morning. We do have, I think, everybody's school might be playing college hoops today. Maryland plays tonight at 6:30 against an Illinois team that's pretty good. White Brian's at 1:00. Good luck. Somebody let the cluster buster. Yeah,
that's why he dressed.
Somebody let the cluster buster know if anybody's expecting White Brian to do any sort of video production from 1:00 until the end of our show. I would guess again. My man's going to be locked in. What's up? The Sun Belt tournament's over, I think. How did UL do, B?
How did who do?
UL. How did your alma mater do on the Sun Belt?
I don't follow no damn basketball at my school. We always suck. That's when the football season's coming around.
That takes care of that. I can't wait for this Terp game tonight. We're going to talk Terps at 11:30 with Jeff Ehrman, the best to do it out there, the best Maryland coverage there is at Inside MD Sports. We're going to talk a little Bengals later this afternoon, talk a little Caps. Caps lost last night. Just, I think this California trip just kind of sucks it out of them. They're in L.A. I think maybe they just didn't play their best. Ethan Kadu will join us at 12:30 to kind of break down all things Caps. But B, it's been a productive morning, I would say. I was on a Zoom with Jeremy McNichols this morning,
right,
who, you know, Washington brought him back. Mm-hmm. He's a physical player, a really good blocker. And he said, he's like, man, you know, kind of the questions about unfinished business or what else Washington has to do, where they have to grow. And he's like, man, nobody has higher expectations for this team than we do. So that's what we're focused on.
Yeah.
And it just got me thinking, as of now, and things can always change, but as of now, they have re-racked the running back room. Brian Robinson, Austin Ekeler, Chris Rodriguez, Jeremy McNichols. How do you feel about them bringing the running back room back as it was constituted last season? And do you let's start there.
I don't have an issue with it because I when I look at the season last year, I heard a lot of people blaming running backs for whatever. And I can see the blocking and stuff went down as they got banged up on the O-line. You know, those things happen. I think when they were all – and when they were healthy and running, nobody complained because they had something good going. I believe you get a better O-line, have more depth, they're going to get back to what they were at the beginning of the season.
I agree with you. I think it's because there's no stats, right? Like there's no numbers I can point you to really illustrate what Laramie Tunsil's impact could be. I think people just don't get as excited about that trade as perhaps they should.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're hearing kind of these whispers from Houston that he wasn't that great in the run. And the one number you can actually point to, the one empirical data point, is the penalties. So I feel like there is a muted level of excitement for what Tunsil will bring to the organization and to the offense. And mm-hmm. I think it's pretty damn significant.
Yeah.
I really, truly believe that. And I also think, however, though, B, that I'm quite cool with all the moves they've made to bring C-Rod back and bring McNichols back. But the reality of the business of football, as we've been reminded, is I still think they could draft somebody and have some competition this summer.
That's very possible. Very possible. And I think, you know, anybody that's on the team should understand that. They're always looking for youth. They're looking for somebody else to come along and, like, take your job, to be honest with you. They will not put it that way. But they're always looking to replace somebody with somebody always that's younger, faster, stronger, bigger. You know what I'm saying? And less expensive.
Cheaper and younger.
Yeah.
It's the name of the game. B, let me ask you this. Because I know you've said it to me. At how many times in your career did they draft your replacement? I mean, they did it after two years, after you won a Super Bowl,
We won
right?
the Super Bowl. They drafted
Reggie Brooks.
They drafted Ricky Irvin after my rookie year. And they drafted Desmond Howard after the Super Bowl year. he was a Heisman Trophy winner. They drafted Reggie Bad. Reggie Brooks come through this thing. I didn't care. You know, line them up. I knock them down. But the whole thing is, if you are afraid of competition, if you're a person that don't know how to get yourself to be the best you can be, then you shouldn't be in this profession. Like I hear all the time, quarterbacks, oh, man, you can't do that to the quarterback. Bull crap. Yes, you can. If the quarterback is scared of competition, he shouldn't be the leader. We always say the quarterback got to be the most mentally tough person out there. But as soon as anybody that they think may give them a little run, they all get a little shaken. Why? If everybody else got to deal with it, they got to deal with it.
I totally agree. And I do think the quarterback position is the most important. As you like to say, also the most dependent.
Yep.
But it's also the most coddled. And
yeah.
the And I think a lot of that, I don't think NIL and transfer portal is good for that. I think that only increases the coddling. Guys, one of the things, I've said this repeatedly, you can argue where Jalen Hurts stacks up in the ranks of NFL quarterbacks.
He's not afraid of the competition.
Bro, one of the things that stood out to me then, long before I had a radio show, I think I was just doing the podcast back then. I don't even remember what year it was, frankly. I bet White Brian does because it was Bama. But when Hurts got benched, I think it was halftime of the national title game, mm-hmm. and he was awful. There's a reason they benched him.
Yeah.
He couldn't hit the ocean from the beach throwing a football. Like, he was awful. And they went to Tua at halftime. Tua brings Bama back to win. Saban, just a masterclass. And at that moment, you knew Hurts was cooked. You knew he wasn't the starting quarterback of the Alabama Crimson Tide anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And for him not to transfer out when everybody transfers out.
Yeah.
Like, that just said so much. He said he wanted to get it. Well, dude, I've talked to Locks about it. Maryland head coach Mike Locksley was the Bama offensive coordinator at that point. And he said, he's like, Jalen really wanted to get his degree from Alabama. And he stayed. And White Brian will know this. I think the subsequent year, I want to say it was the SEC title game. Maybe it was the Natty again. And Tua got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And Hurts came in and they won that game. And it just felt like such a cool full circle moment. And when everybody throws that word dog around all the time.
Yeah.
If you're a dog, if you're a canine, as the great Doc Walker would say, mm-hmm. if you are in this for championships, you don't care if they bring in competition.
No. Listen, dog, I'll tell you this. When I was in ninth grade at the junior high school, and they called me over because after I played one game, and I played in a JV game one night, and I balled out. And the varsity coach called me to come to the varsity field, which I had to get after school, get in a little van, go over there, and he say, you're going to be our starting quarterback. I wasn't even going to the high school. And I knew then, okay, well, if they could just replace you with a possibility, because I was the possibility. I was the guy with the potential. They replaced the guy, Trahan, whatever his name, Paul Trahan. They replaced him with me. So when I hit the 10th grade, I'm always seeing who's coming next. And if they coming, they better be ready, because I'm not gonna shy away from the competition. I go to college, same thing happened. I get to the pros, they kept bringing them in. I didn't care. But when you show me, if you ever show a teammate you're afraid of competition, they don't have a lot of faith in you.
Mm-mm.
Believe that.
And dude, that's one thing I think DQ has been really good at, and I think it's kind of a Pete Carroll thing. I know. Just as a kid that started to really like college football, as that USC team with Pete Carroll was really cooking, kind of the Reggie Bush days, mm-hmm. Lendale White. Pete Carroll then, it's about constant, everyday competing.
Yeah.
And in all facets, the key to competition is you get better too. And I think that is what Dan Quinn preaches. That's what Adam Peters is all about. Like, no complacency. I've always thought, especially in the Bruce days, the line between confidence and arrogance and confidence and complacency was very, very thin. Mm. And I think these dudes don't operate like that anymore.
See, the thing of it is, Jay, like that little saying that act like you've been there before. And you know what I say to that? The people that say that, they've never been there before. Because you have to have some level of athletic arrogance, as Coach Gibbs told me. You don't have athletic arrogance, then you won't believe in yourself. You will be afraid of everything, like most people are. But you got to have some level of that to be able to do it. So when you score, you floss a little bit. When you do something you're supposed to be doing at a high, and you do it at a super high level, you're going to be excited. You're more excited for yourself that you did it and you accomplish it, then you are trying to show somebody up. But you hear the people go, oh, act like you've been there before. Damn it, obviously I know you haven't been there, because you wouldn't say that. If you were there, you would never say that crap. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Because you know what? Normally when you're super excited, you haven't been there before. So let's be real about it.
Right. Commanders continue to kind of bring some signings in. I do want to have maybe a more in-depth conversation about Dietrich Wise, who they signed from the Pats. I talked early this morning to Logan Paulson. We recorded a podcast with him for Beltway Football, and Logan was really into Wise. They've also now added their first true edge, I guess, in Jacob Martin from the Bears.
We just watched some stuff of him, bro. That dude got some bend, lean, speed, and multiple moves.
They are clearly trying to find Jacob Martin, 6'2", 240, originally drafted by the Seahawks back in 2018. He's been around. I mean, this is a dude that's been on six teams in roughly seven seasons. Mm-hmm. They're trying to find guys and give themselves flexibility. Flexibility for what? I don't know. Perhaps there is a trade out there that they are interested in, but they're clearly keeping a chunk of money available. And at this point in time, on the straight free agent market, there's nobody available on the straight free agent market that's probably worth the money they'll command. Mm-hmm. You're overpaying. Yeah, like, what's available in free agency right now is the cost of a soda at a NBA game. Like, you know that thing should only cost $2.50, and you're paying $9 for it.
You should have just went to a dozen of eggs.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think there's a reason they're not just, like, aggressively going after what's on the market. I think they're pretty confident in what they put together. I think the Debo and the Tunsil moves are massive. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to switch gears a hair here, B. We're going to talk football most of the day. You know how we operate. We're going to weave some Terps, some Caps in there. College hoop season is here. But, Brian, obviously, you know, I got to listen. I need to go back and listen to that 8 o'clock segment. But the Junkies had certainly a tribute to John Feinstein. John Feinstein, just an absolute dynamic writer, reporter, person, compelling figure, opinionated man. Somebody you and I know well. Mm-hmm. From the TV side. I know John on, like, a personal level because our kids were on the same swim team. I'd see him at swim practice. You know, the news yesterday, I can kind of say it now. We were doing our show, and Matt Valdez, Junkies producer, was in there. You know that studio where Valdez does his, like, you know, post-production, whatever it is he's doing? Mm-hmm. I was walking by, and I could hear, you know, he's playing Feinstein audio. And I was like, oh, College Hoops, you guys getting John on? And he just looked at me with this, like, vacant, like, mm-hmm. stare. Yeah. And I'm like, what the hell? And, you know, then a few minutes later, as you and I were leaving, I guess, B, you know, CK told us that John had passed. Mm-hmm. And within probably a half hour of that discussion, you know, the Post had a story up, and then it became public. Yeah. And it was just jarring. It was shocking.
Yeah.
That, you know, that John was just gone.
True, true. And I think the thing about it, man, like, I think a few weeks ago I had talked about going home for the weekend. I think you weren't here that day. And I was saying, you know, something had happened. And I say, hug your family. Make sure people know you love them, because, like, life is short. You never know. And that's an example of that. You see somebody today, they're gone tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? And I think you joke about it a lot, saying you're old and this, that, and the other. But as you get older, you start realizing you're not invincible. When you're 18 years old, 20, 25, 30, you don't think about the end ever. But when you get across 40, you start thinking you got more that's gone by than you got left. And I think that's why you got to live life to the fullest, man. That's the ultimate thing. Live it to the fullest.
Yeah, man. You wonder when you go from the front nine to the back nine. And with John, I listened to Wilbon on PTI talking about him, and obviously those guys knew each other from, hell, whatever, the mid-80s Washington Post, right? Yeah. And he called him a complicated dude, and perhaps that's fair. Certainly opinionated. And for me with John, he was largely very cool, very supportive, but there were times where he would disagree with something I said or something he thought I said, and we would have a disagreement here and there. Mm-hmm. So here's what we're going to do. Dan Steinberg is an absolutely brilliant writer on his own right. He has transitioned to an editing role at the Washington Post. But Steins is brilliant, and Steins has been Feinstein's editor for the last 5 years, I believe. Dan's going to join us next. We're going to have a conversation about John and try to do a man that made an incredible impact on this planet justice. Nobody go anywhere. It's Beam and Finley.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Very excited to get to the Rude Guest Hotline and welcome in a longtime friend, Dan Steinberg, Washington Post, D.C. Sports Blog. D.C. Sports Blog changed the way sports was covered in this city and perhaps in this country, and Dan will deflect all of the praise I give him. But you have made a tremendous impact. But today I don't want to harass you about writing again. I want to talk to you about a guy we all know and know well, in John Feinstein. How you doing, Steins?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
We're doing. So for you, I mean, what was the first Feinstein book you read?
I think that it was A Season Inside, which was a college basketball book that he wrote a couple years after the Bobby Knight book. And Steve Kerr was one of the primary figures in that one. But it was about, I think, the 1987 college basketball season. But it was all of his college basketball books were the ones I was drawn to. And it was in the, you know, it's kind of the late 80s when to me anyhow, it felt like college basketball was really taking off in the country, and it was like, you know, Big Monday and John Feinstein for me were like two of the things that really kind of crystallized my love of college basketball.
Yeah, I think the explosion of cable TV and then ESPN really pushed college hoops to like another level, because there was just so much of it you all of a sudden got to watch. At that point in my life, I was a young boy, I guess, living in North Carolina, where college basketball was absolutely king. And Feinstein kind of came into my life through the Post. And then, like, ESPN Sports Reporters, I remember watching that as a kid on Saturday or Sunday mornings, whatever that was. And for me and for you and for Brian, B, did he ever cover you? Did you ever, like, deal with John in a locker room?
Never in a locker room, but I did a lot of stuff we would cross paths at, what's it called?
Comcast.
In Comcast.
Yeah, so I think what's interesting for Brian and I is, like, I've worked with John when I was on like the production side in digital. I remember I produced these shows with John and Gary Williams. Mm-hmm. And it blew my mind that I was like giving them direction. Just two dudes that are like actually in the Hall of Fame. And we did that for a while. For you, over the last 4 or 5 years, you've been Feinstein's editor. And you work with a ton of titans over there at the Post. I don't want to diminish it, but how hard would it be to edit or give John Feinstein direction?
Yeah, that was my initial kind of feeling or thought, and I was awed a little bit about it because, like I said, I started reading him when I was, you know, 12 years old, and he was one of the reasons that I wanted to get into this industry. And when I was a sophomore at the University of Delaware, they hired Mike Bray as the head coach, and you know, he's a DeMatha guy, I think, right?
And yeah, and Duke
guy. That Feinstein knew forever. And so Feinstein was up there to, like, I can't remember why, but he was on campus at Delaware, and Mike Bray invited all the kids from the student newspaper to come meet him. And so I'd met him when I was, you know, a 19 or 20-year-old or whatever, still hoping to get in the industry. And then, you know, I met him when I came to the Post again and dealt with him intermittently over the years, and he was never shy about offering advice and, among other things, told me that I was completely wasting my time doing a blog and it was beneath me and I should stop doing that. But so, yeah, becoming his editor for like a day or whatever, it was like a little bit surreal, but like he wasn't, I guess he wasn't the kind of guy that would have that kind of relationship. Like immediately, there's like, you know, it was a very kind of old school newspaper relationship where there was no, like, no time or space for like awe or formality or anything. You know, we would like curse at each other and I would like absolutely tell him this is stupid or this doesn't make any sense or whatever. You know, that was kind of the relationship. And mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people today, including people that we're friends with, have said what a like amazing, tremendous, you know, groundbreaking writer he was. I don't know that that's totally true. He was like an amazing reporter and like a fearless reporter, but I don't know that his writing was like what really set him apart. So yeah, I edited him, and he would push back, and he would yell at me about stuff, and I would yell at him. I mean, it was definitely a relationship. It was different from my relationship with like Barry Cerulli or something, which is we don't curse at each other a lot. I would say, you know, but Feinstein sort of like was old school in that way. And I don't know if you read, but George Solomon, the longtime sports editor of the Post, who I know at least Brian, I definitely know, has dealt with a lot. He wrote a piece today about Feinstein. And he was fond of saying that he, like, fired Feinstein 5 times. And, I mean, he was, like, difficult to deal with. That was, like, part of who he was. It would be crazy not to.
But it was endearing.
But you know what I loved about him? He, and this is what I love about most people that are this way. They are going to be who they are no matter what you feel or think.
100%.
And you have to learn to respect those people because what they are, they're going to just give it to you. They're not going to sugarcoat or change up to be somebody else to try to benefit you.
100% true, yeah. Brian. And like stuff like among DC sports fans, one of the things that he became known for was like his insistence that the Nats screwed up by shutting down Strasburg in the playoffs.
Right.
That was not like a first take bit that he was doing to try to get attention, because he would have that same exact argument over and over and over again with all of us offline. Like that was something that he deeply believed. He was not someone who was ever going to like fake it for ratings or to make like an argument. Like I think he was wrong a lot, or at least according to me, but it was like deeply held and like he was passionate about it. And I think like Coach K said that somewhere today, I think that it didn't matter. He didn't care whether anyone agreed with him or disagreed with him, and he wasn't doing it for, like, the clicks. He was doing it because those were the things he believed, and he believed things very strongly.
Well, dude, I even think he was doing that before the clicks. You know what I mean? Like, for him to have a relationship with Bobby Knight in the 80s, when Bobby Knight was the king of the sport, right? It'd be like Bobby Knight, Dean Smith, John Thompson were these, like, titans.
Yep.
And he was fearless in a guy in Bobby Knight that you know, got off on intimidation. And there was no retweeting. There was no shouting shows on various sports networks in the morning. That's just who John was. And I remember for me, and dude, I'm like a 28, 29-year-old kid trying to get him and Gary to do these segments that I know if I can get John and Gary to talk about who was the kid at Duke that was tripping everybody. Remember that kid?
I can see his face.
Me too. Grayson,
he
something.
In the NBA for a while. He might still be.
Yeah. Whoever that kid was, the Duke kid that was tripping everybody. Like, I'm in my internet brain, I'm like, all right, I need Gary and John to talk about this, and this will do really well online. And John's like, absolutely not. American University's lost six in a row. And I'm just like, or GW, whoever it was. And I'm just like, dude, please. Like, we could do GW if you'll give me the Duke kid also. But that's just who he was. He did not care about the nonsense that now drives so much of, like, the drivel of sports conversation. He cared about what 100%. He thought was the good story.
You're right. Grayson Allen. It was Grayson Allen, right?
That kid.
Was there anything you took from
him? He was going to be today. He had moved to Farmville, Virginia. I don't know if you knew this. He was working at this school teaching journalism and doing Farmville basketball games. But he was up in D.C., which is why he was at his brother's house. And he was there to do the A-10 tournament for us today at Cap One Arena. And I don't know if you saw the images from Cap One Arena yesterday. It wasn't like a packed house necessarily for, you know, GW Florida. But that's the stories that he loved. Those were the games that he loved. And, like, and he was, like, a really perceptive media critic, too, because he watched ESPN all the time. And he hated a lot of what they did and was very open about criticizing them. But he would have, like, been in his glory this week at the A-10 tournament, where he would have known all the coaches and where he would have gotten to know the kids. And he loved kind of telling those stories about lesser-known players. You know, I would say sometimes he probably overly romanticized some of the smaller schools and the lesser-known coaches, but those were the stories that he loved, even though he was friends with, you know, Tom Izzo and Coach K and not friends with Bobby Knight, but certainly, you know, close acquaintances with him. And, you know, John Thompson, all those people he knew well, but he really, really was drawn to the smaller schools and the under-the-radar stories.
Is there anything from John Starr that you took or something that you say, oh, I can't do that?
Well, when people talk about him being fearless, it was, I think a lot of times people tap dance around questions now, around hard questions, and he didn't do that. He wouldn't call, like, college kids student athletes. He wouldn't call, like, the big sponsors corporate champions. If there was, like, a coach that he knew and he wanted to go talk to, and there was, like, a security guard saying you can't talk to him on this feet, he would be like, F you, and just go do it anyhow. You know, there was, like, a very old school, like, kind of aggressive newspaper mentality to him that I don't know if I ever adopted that, but I sort of wish that I did, or I admired that in him. Like, he really, really did not care about sort of playing by the rules or getting along to go along, all that stuff. He wanted to get the information that he wanted to get. He was going to do whatever he needed to do to get it, I would say. You know who he's friends with? He was good friends with Bob Woodward. Bob Woodward considered himself John's mentor, because when John started at the Post, he was working in Metro, and he was covering cops, and you know, Bob Woodward came out of Metro when he broke the Watergate stuff. And so he had, like, a really kind of old school reporter instinct that I definitely admired.
Well said. Thank you. I know you're a low profile guy these days. I appreciate you making time for us.
I mean, can I say, the craziest thing is that he was, you know, he wrote about Selection Sunday for us every year. It was, like, his favorite day. It used to be my favorite day of the calendar. And he hadn't been in the office to do it with us since the pandemic, and he was going to come in on Sunday. It was going to be the first time we were going to do it together for God knows how many years. It's like so, I mean, I talked to him so long the day before. It's just like unreal to me that this week is happening and he's not part of it. It's just
dude,
really,
I
like,
saw him rattling. I saw him at the club having lunch with his daughter, like,
yeah, his
10
daughter.
Days ago.
And yeah, his daughter's I didn't want to.
Right, I didn't want to like interrupt him, but I saw him, and I in that moment took for granted, like, all right, I see John all the time, you know, like I didn't think, I was like, oh, swimming's coming up, I'll see him this summer. I
yeah.
No moment did I think like, oh, and it's just crazy.
Let me say one more thing. I know you guys got to go, but like the other thing that he had was just
talk for an hour.
a huge amount of self confidence and self belief in who he was and what he did, and so he filed this Tom Izzo column for me Wednesday morning or Tuesday. Wednesday morning, I guess it was Wednesday morning, and called me to make sure that I got it. And I was like, yeah, I got it. He's like, it's very good. And like that, like I work in an industry with people who are like consumed by self-doubt and like neuroticism, and he just never had that. He was like, I'm John Feinstein, and here's Tom Izzo column, and it's good. And it was like, yeah, I mean, there's just something so like kind of pure about who he was. There was like never any artifice about anything. You know what I mean? He was just, this is who he was, and take it or leave it, and it's just crazy that he's gone.
I respect that. Totally.
Yeah.
And I bet, like, I haven't read the column. I have the Post Sports page up on my computer, and I know Barry has the column. I want to read the Solomon, but it's seeing John up there in that top right. Tom Izzo is having too much fun to stop coaching now. I'm guessing he got Izzo on the phone for that column.
He did, yeah.
You know how hard it is to get Izzo on the phone in mid-March when he's got a title contender?
For us, not for John.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was – he could get it. He could get anyone on the phone. I a couple weeks ago, he was like, oh, I'm coming to D.C. for the day. I'm going to have lunch with Steve Kerr downtown. But it was like so like – he didn't – I mean, he bragged about a lot of stuff. He didn't really brag about that. It was just he knew everyone famous in the game, and he – that was what his career was built on, was like kind of those relationships and not being afraid to kind of make them. So,
thank you again, man. This has been great.
Cool. Appreciate you.
It's good talking to you guys. Good hearing your voices.
Thank you, man.
Okay.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it, man. I owe your brother-in-law a round of golf. I know. That is Dan Steinberg. Imagine being John Feinstein's editor. That's not an easy position, man.
Nah.
A few more Feinstein stories. We'll get back to football at 11. Nobody go anywhere. It's B. Mitchell Finley. B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Incredible irony for Feinstein to pass in March in the middle of conference tournament time. And, you know, we're all just going to talk about all his incredible work with college basketball, but he was also incredibly passionate about golf.
Yep.
And some of his golf books are just incredible. And I had to go back and look. Did you ever read A Good Walk Spoiled, B?
No, I know he wrote that book. I didn't read it.
So, I have it somewhere in the house, and I couldn't find it. I was looking for it this morning.
I thought the title was rather funny when I first saw it. Like, A Good Walk Spoiled, and if you are a true golfer and you like to take walks, when you put golf into it, it got moments where you wonder why the hell did you pick up this game? You know what
totally.
I mean?
Totally.
Because there's more frustration.
There's moments where you question your life.
There's more frustration in it than it is excitement.
Right. Do you know where that quote's from?
Where?
It's actually a Mark Twain quote from like the 1800s. Twain famously said, golf is a good walk spoiled.
Uh-huh.
Which shows you the depth of what golf is. That Mark Twain, whenever Mark Twain was alive, that was Civil War era, right? So like 1860s, it felt the same way you and I do when we play the game sometimes, you know?
Yeah. You more often than I do.
Yeah, me more often than you, for sure. and there are two things about that book. A Season on the Brink about Bobby Knight in 87, I believe it's 87, is probably the best sports book I've ever read. I love that book. It's a wire-to-wire, cover-to-cover. You can't stop. It's like a thriller, even though you know the story. The access is unparalleled. I can't remember the name of the book about... He wrote a book about Dean, Coach K, and Jim Valvano. That was great. But A Good Walk Spoiled, there's something about... There's two parts in it that have always stuck with me. you remember the name Paul Goidos, B?
Slightly.
Exactly. He was like this fringe, trying to make it on tour guy. And I remember, I don't know if it's the foreword or what, but Feinstein writes about Goidos in a way that everybody cared. And as much as in that era, so that book's probably early 90s, and it's Nick Faldo, it's Tom Watson, you know what I mean? Like Fred Couples are kind of the titans of the tour at that point. But like Goidos becomes this incredible character because he's trying to maintain his tour card, and he's, you know what I mean? Like it shows the how hard everything is. And Goidos also had his own personal struggles, I believe, alcoholism and stuff. But like it brought a fringe person to real life, and Goidos became kind of like this like cult hero for a lot of people that have read the book. Mm-hmm. But by far the thing that stuck with me most at the end of the very book, I want to say it's like damn near the last line, is he says it's something like, no matter what was going on tour, all anybody ever talked about was this young fella, Tiger Woods, and mm-hmm. they all knew he was coming. And it was like this foreshadowing of this meteoric, whatever you want to call Tiger's golf career and uh-huh. subsequent life. And just to be able to like weave somebody like Goidos and then the coming onslaught of Tiger Woods into one thing.
Yeah.
And dude, Steinberg was right.
That's the brilliance of it, though.
Bro, like, for Luga, Barry, I think, might be the most gifted straight writer, like literary writer, the Post has had in my lifetime. The way Barry can write is unbelievable. John's writing was direct, but his storytelling was something else entirely. I hope that delineation makes sense and is the compliment I mean it to be. I hope everybody that John mattered to finds some peace. I truly am praying for his children, his family, his brother. What a man, what a legacy. We're gonna continue the program.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.